Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You have found the Shanny Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup You may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media. But guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanny Pants Show. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm not even going to try to say your last name. You're just Eric to me.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I'll go ahead and let you kind of do a brief introduction.
Yeah, my name is Eric Skorzynski. I'm the host of the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast dedicated to shedding light on abuse within independent fundamental Baptist churches. The reason I focus on independent fundamental Baptist churches is because I was born and raised in one for the first 18 years of my life. Had some wacky interactions stepping into it in my adult life as well, and ultimately ended up leaving the church as a result of many different types of abuses that I saw firsthand and saw happening throughout the denomination. And a couple years ago, I decided to start a show because I saw the patterns continuing to repeat. And it really was a matter of, okay, nobody's covering this in a ongoing way. There's a couple big news articles. There's a couple big, there's one big 2020 documentary that came out, several years ago, but nothing continuous and not enough to cover the gamut of all these stories. And almost 300 episodes later, there's still a lot more stories to share, unfortunately. That's kind of the origin of the show, and was recently featured in the documentary series Let Us Pray, which hit number 7 on Max and premiered on Investigation Discovery. And I can't believe I almost forgot that. But it's been a wild, unexpected journey.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. And it's been so fun watching or listening to your podcast grow over the last, maybe it's been about a year that I've been listening to it, but it's very, like you said, it's unfortunate that there are so many more stories, but I do think it's so wonderful that there are platforms like yours where people can kind of, for some people it's very healing to talk about their stories. And
they're people too. So it's the bright side, mm-hmm. is the people. And I've made a lot of really close connections that, again, wouldn't have made without the unfortunate circumstances that bring us all together.
Right.
But it's been really cool to build some really close friendships through the show and finding people that have those similar backgrounds that I think when you're growing up in a bit of a bubble in your area, like to reconnect with people who, or connect with people who grew up in similar bubbles across the country that you didn't know existed. So you go from feeling very alone to feeling very connected, which is a really cool thing.
And it's so interesting. I just met someone last week when you talk about the connections. It's such a small world. And I just met someone randomly. I'm taking like a comedy class down in Sacramento and ran into a lady and we started talking because, like, of course, my bit is on cult stuff. And she's like, oh, my gosh. Like, she was like making these weird faces. I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, I feel like we grew up in the same cult, but we didn't. And literally like in Alta, which is like, you know, maybe 30 minutes away from where I live. Very similar circumstances. Mm. And it's like, oh my gosh, all, you know, you never knew. And they're all our lives. We live 30 minutes away from each other and both living in really weird, extreme cults. So it's crazy. Small world. There's a lot of them out there, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny to imagine you thinking that you're bombing while you're watching someone's facial reactions.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, we're trauma bonding. Okay. Cool.
I know. Exactly. And like something I said, you get like, there's more of a connection here. Yeah,
well, we're
sad.
Close. You're Northern California. I was Southern California. So,
actually,
that couldn't be any more different. For anybody who's not from California, it feels like two different states. But hey, same state at least.
Everyone's like, oh, when you say you're from California, so do you surf? And I'm like, no. If I was athletic, I would be more on the skiing side of things because I'm a northern, but I'm not athletic, so I'm not any sports.
My friends are farmers in here in Central California.
Exactly. There's a lot of California. Okay, so I want to hear kind of your story. You were obviously born into this, kind of what your childhood was like, and then kind of what prompted you to get out. And then I want to talk more about what you're doing now.
Yeah, all that, huh?
Yeah, all of it. So you just talk. You just go for it, Eric.
Yeah. So I'll give you the somewhere between the short to medium version. So I was born into the Independent Fundamental Baptist movement. My dad was a Catholic who converted to Christianity. My mom was pretty much raised in a similar fashion, I would say. She grew up some other shade of Baptist that's basically Fundamental Baptist. Her parents were missionaries. So like she was very much in that world. And my parents started attending before I was born. I was born into it. And literally from the time that I was born to the time I was 18, like I was learning the doctrine, theology, and mission of the church. And so I always tell people like the same time I'm learning the sky is blue and 1 + 1 = 2 and all those things, I'm learning Jesus loves you. If you don't love him back, you're going to hell, which is, you know, it does some things to you as a kid, that I'm still unpacking today. But that was kind of my early experiences. I say all that, but I also always like to hit home. I didn't know anything different at the time. So I loved my childhood. It's still something to this day that there's things that happened that I think I could look back and say, oh, that was traumatic. Or I could look back and say, oh, that was negative. But my experiences were my experiences. So like, I look back at my childhood to remember, yeah, we spent 7 days a week on the church property. That's weird. But I remember riding my bike with my friends. I remember catching lizards and, you know, doing all the things that kids do. It was just against a backdrop that most kids probably didn't experience. So really loved it. Really loved the church. You know, and I also love storytelling. So I was running around with the camera all the time. I would film church events. Like, it was a playground, literally, for me to just kind of explore and grow up. But also, I'm being formed into one of, you know, many copies of the same thing. So
follow the leader.
Yeah, follow the leader. So I still have to say, I love the movement. I didn't have anything out for it in the beginning. I wasn't a bitter kid. I didn't fight with my parents. I wasn't slamming the door saying, I hate church and I want to find a way to tear it down, which I think could be the misconception. Nothing really ever burst my bubble in the denomination until I was about 16 years old. And a youth pastor and coach from Northern California in Chico I found out he was coming to our church in Southern California. They were moving And I knew him because we'd done basketball tournaments and camps. And I texted one of the guys on his team and said, hey, you know, I'm kind of excited. He's a cool guy. He's coming down here. Are you bummed you're losing your coach and your youth pastor and all that stuff? And he texted back and said, not really. I'm kind of upset. He didn't even say goodbye. And so I literally went and Googled and just to see if there was an announcement, if there's a reason he's leaving. And like the second result down was warrant issued for Chico youth pastor's arrest. And so, again, I'm in a bubble. The pastor is the height of the authority. I don't know who to talk to. And I start telling staff, hey, I found this article. I don't know what to do. Here you go. It seems like a big deal. And I was met with either indifference to it's not that big a deal, to more commonly it was, you're bitter. Why are you so upset about something? You know, he needs to be able to go to church too. You're affecting his family by bringing it up. And so basically over the next 2 years, my bubble kind of became this thing where everyone started turning on me. People I'd known my entire life weren't talking to me. It was a very, you know, my youth pastor who I used to talk to every week is now kind of giving me cold shoulder. It just really became an uncomfortable place to be. And, ended up leaving when I graduated and went and worked for a ministry that filmed with churches like ours all over the country. So I ended up spending 2 years traveling to like 16 different states, 3 different countries, shooting promotional videos, commercials, things for the church, while also really pulling away privately and personally from what I thought was the truth. And did that, ended up falling in love with one of the ministries I filmed for. It was a missions organization, got married, flew out there, spent some time on the mission field. There's a long story there, but ended up having a not good split from them and found myself getting a secular job, working marketing for a car dealership, and still seeing these stories come across my desk until one day I was like, someone should cover this, you know. But that's the very condensed version. I'm happy to go right up close on any of those points.
Yes. Okay. Well, first, I'm curious, when you are talking about your whole, you know, basically child life, were you in that same IFB church the whole time? Did your family ever move around, or was the same location the whole time?
Same church in Banning, California. And I literally, when I say I grew up there, for context for people who don't know this world, like, our private Christian school went from K-5 to 12th grade. So literally from the time I was 5 years old, I was going to school 5 days a week. And I went on the same campus in the same building all the way through high school. And so when I say bubble, it's literally like an L-shaped bubble building there in the middle of Banning. And, you know, so Monday through Friday was at the school. Saturday was going out knocking doors and inviting people to church. Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night was actual services. So I spent literally more time at the church than I did at my house.
And so when you leave, this is your life. All your friends are here. You don't really have anything on the outside. When you were younger, then what was there anything, like you said, your child, like during your childhood, you had a good childhood, you know, you feel like there was nothing that really, were there any things as far as like rules or things that stand out that looking back, like, because I know, like for me, we had to dress different, like there was a lot of little things that as a child didn't make, I mean, they still don't make sense, but it was our norm, right? And so it was normal then, but is there anything like that that you look back on now besides, you know, having people that should be arrested coming to your church?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess I can frame it. It wasn't healthy reasons the rules existed, but they weren't traumatic to me because I didn't know anything else. So was, you know, when you go down the list of things, I mean, I wore suits to every service that we went to. That was a very strict rule.
Okay.
There's pictures of me at like 5 wearing a suit in the nursery, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
You know, girls were taught, you know, very extreme modesty rules, like don't show your shoulders, you know, have your collar be, you know, 2 fingers, which I'm in dress code. Hey,
and yeah, then, you
know, don't have your skirt above your knees. Like if you sit down, your skirt should still be below your knee. You know, I remember rules for staff, like my mom had to wear pantyhose. That was like a rule for all the time. Like All of that stuff was there. And then, like, we couldn't listen to music that had any type of a beat. We couldn't go to movie theaters. We couldn't watch movies that, you know, were R-rated. We couldn't, like, couldn't dance. Don't drink alcohol, which is a good rule for any kids, but adults couldn't drink alcohol. It was all that kind of stuff. And then, like, as far as even religion, like, anybody that wasn't Independent Baptist, we didn't look at as being on the same level. So, like, you're not hanging out with Southern Baptists, you're not hanging out with evangelicals, you're not hanging, especially ones that play drums on their stage, like, all that kind of stuff was very strict. So, yeah, there was a lot of weird things like that, and just a lot of teaching just about everything had very strict rules, like 6 inches from girls, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. And it was a constant, I would say, a moving goalpost of, you'd get to a point where you're like, I'm thriving, I'm doing all the things, I'm checking all the boxes. And then you go to the next grade and there's more things, or you go to this extra ministry and you have more rules, and it just kept piling on and piling on.
Now, did you guys do, like you were saying, that you kind of, people were, as soon as you brought up the subject of this new youth pastor coming into town and the information that you had found about him, and you said people started distancing themselves from you, was that a normal thing? Do you feel like, we called it marking, like if someone, you know, was pushing the boundaries or being a bad influence or whatever, we would call it marking and you just want to talk to him. Was that kind of a thing, or was this like a huge shock for you to get these feelings?
It was a huge shock for me. So in the Baptist world, like, they talk a lot about being separated. So they talk literally about, like, the doctrine of separation, and there's different layers of separation, and like how separated you should be from, you know, somebody, like, here's somebody that's doing something wrong, we're separated from them. Here's somebody who is friends with doing something that's wrong, we're going to have secondary separation from them. Like, it was a long list of things. And the reason it was shocking to me is that for me at that time, to me, I could justify, hey, we're separate from Catholics, we're separate from the people having affairs, we're separate from the people having sex out of marriage, we're separate from, you know, again, all at this time, we're separate from people that are living these lifestyles that we don't agree with. But then it was like, I'm feeling that, but I'm one of you. This doesn't make any sense. And I also felt like it's a weird, I've been having conversations with some other people that grew up the same way. And I was kind of talking to them about, like, the teachings that we received and applied sometimes put us at odds with the church that was teaching it. So, like, you'd sit there and listen to a pastor say, you know, stand up for what's right. You know, even if it's not popular, there's a big poster in the school that said, what's right is not always popular, what's popular is not always right. And so you find yourself in these positions where you're being told, be a warrior, take a stand, be strong, stand against the flow. And then when you're like, hey, there's a predator here, I'm going to stand up for what's right and tell my leadership, then all of a sudden, you're not on their team. And you're like, you told me to do this. Like, you said that we should do what's right. So that's why when I say the bubble burst, it was like this instant thing of like, oh, this is not what you guys said it was. Like, this is not right.
Right. Well, and you have, you have the situation where, you know, it potentially could be dangerous or harm other people and probably your friends or siblings or whatever. So it's like you're trying to get the warning out there. And obviously it wasn't taken very seriously, or or that's what they do. Right. They're used to.
Sure.
It's probably not their first rodeo of moving someone around and hiding them elsewhere and doing all that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the pastor came from, you know, in the series Let Us Pray, they talk about Jack Hyles and First Baptist Church of Hammond and all the scandal there. Like, my pastor grew up there. So, like, again, whether or not it was the first time it had happened at one of his ministries, it's like he was learning from guys who definitely, this was not first, you know, first rodeo, as you said.
And now, were you still there then when he showed up, or did they... So, oh my God.
Yeah. So I was there and he was there for the last 2 years I was in school, and led to a lot of confrontation. Again, I went from being basically a kid that kind of just followed the rules And I was never the one sneaking out at night, never the one sneaking alcohol. Like the worst things I did was like, oh, I'm listening to Weezer on my friend's Zune. You know, like that's a sentence.
Yes, no, it sure is.
But you know, I got in trouble for stuff like that. But right. like I towed the line pretty well. Like I would say, you know, for how much shame and guilt I felt all the time, I did pretty well, I feel like, as a kid. You know, so he was there the last 2 years I was there, and it took me, you know, I would get in arguments with my dad about it. I'm getting arguments with staff about it. Like my friend remembers clearly like me yelling in my dad's office, and like everyone in the school could hear, because I was saying like, what is the point of all this? Why are you guys doing this? And yeah, he was there then until I graduated. His wife ended up becoming the principal of the school shortly after I left. They were there till literally about a year ago. They were there and heavily involved. He was leading music, still there, even though he pled no contest to charges. And, you know, they ended up leaving. And not a funny story, but interesting thing. Immediately after they left the church, a new vice principal or assistant vice principal stepped in. And he was literally arrested like 2 months ago for the exact same things.
My gosh.
Yeah. So I felt it was one of those things where, you know, I don't necessarily blame people when something happens, because things happen everywhere. But huge caveat to that is how you respond to situations sends a big beacon out to say what we allow and what we don't. And Absolutely. So I think if they would have handled that situation correctly, I think it could have really changed the way that I viewed the ministry, the way that the community now would view the ministry, and the way that I think victims who are probably, I mean, statistically 1 in 4, right? How victims who are sitting in the pew and seeing this stuff happen would feel about the ministry. But again, like I said, that's a short version of a long story, and there's plenty of those.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure there are. And so do you feel like, I mean, it sounds like your family, your parents were very involved in the church, obviously, in the school. Was there any, you seem like you had a pretty normal, in quotations here, childhood, though, aside from the church? Do you feel like your family life was pretty average, normal-ish?
Yes. I mean, yeah, okay. Like it was pretty normal aside from the super not normal thing that took up all of our time. So
true.
So,
and I forget, you were there so much. So really, your home life kind of just is a part of your church life.
The same. It was you know, my parents did a good job, you know, spending time with me. Mm. But also they were gone a lot, even though we were at the same place. So like the lines of personal life and the ministry were so blurred. We're like, dad, you know, my dad's attending church to worship, but also is on the clock. My mom is there to worship, but is also teaching. I'm there growing up and running around with a camera because that's what I like to do, but also I'm delivering videos because that's my ministry. And then I'm getting on a bus with the other kids, but I'm not getting candy and getting picked up the same way. I'm helping supervise as I get older and knocking on doors and picking them up. So like, yes, there's like normal, but it's all subjective. And my home life, though, like as far as like, you know, my parents were not, you know, abusive. They weren't, you know, there were things that weren't good. But like, again, I think given the circumstances, it was the best of a bad situation. You know, the worst things that we experienced were related more to extremely low ministry pay, where, you know, financially we struggled a ton. But, you know, I'm not by any means the first or last kid in America to have that experience. So like, it is, you know what you know, right? So like, if somebody went from like going middle class to my life, they would be like, that was traumatic. For me, it was like, this is life.
When you're 18, you started, you left, but you were still involved with the church, the IAFB church, but just not your, like, the movement. Okay.
Yeah. It was basically, I went from IFB to, there was a guy who ran a media company that at the time was called Fundamental Media. He literally was rebranding it to be called Pro Church. And he had grown up in it. He was probably 10, 15 years older than me. And he called and asked how I wanted to intern. And he basically said, there's a lot of issues in the IFB. There's a lot of issues. Like, a lot of my clients are still in it, but there's some of the better people within the Independent Baptist movement, like some of the good guys. And, you know, instead of you going to one of these Bible colleges and like hating your life for the next 4 years, would you like to come film with me and shoot stuff and like join my team? So that was an easy choice. But like, it wasn't same exact thing the clients were, but like my direct environment was a little more contemporary, a little more loose, a little bit less legal. Like, it was just a better version, especially compared to what I was coming out of. But all of the people I was interacting with were like still very much in that world. So I got a little sampler platter of like the whole country of like
That's
fundamentalists.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Do you still like, are you glad that you did that and you got to experience that part of your life though?
Yeah. I mean,
even though it was kind of like a bridge to out.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the person I worked with, I'm still friends with, and like,
okay,
and,
cool.
And, I had a really good time for 2 years. Like it's my beginning of adulthood. So like,
yeah.
And I always wanted to film. I always wanted to shoot stuff. I always wanted to be creative. So like, you know, my first project was literally 3 weeks in India filming for a documentary. Then I'm getting flown to, you know, I'd never got to go to most of the states. Like, growing up, we went to Arizona or we're staying in California. So it's like, now I'm getting flown to Kentucky and I'm getting flown to Hawaii and I'm getting flown here and I get to go to Virginia and like, and I'm meeting different people. I'm trying different food. Like, I'm, you know, it was a really cool experience and it molded me a lot. And then the international stuff that led to, you know, was massive perspective shifts. Just, you know, I think travel is so important, but it's something where I got to see, you know, here's what Hindus do. I'm meeting actual Muslims in Muslim majority areas. And like, at the time, I still viewed it as, I have this burden that all these people are wrong. But it also did things where, like, when I hear to this day political dialogue about refugees, for example, or I hear dialogue around, you know, Muslims, or I hear dialogue around Hindus or India or, you know, Cuba, or, you know, I went to Cuba before the embargo was lifted. Like, there's a lot of things like that where I feel like it helped me mature a lot quicker and be able to understand and develop empathy for people who aren't just like me. And I think that was those 2 years, and then like the year and a half that followed doing missions work, like, it was a massive perspective shift, and it's not something I would trade, even though, you know, do I wish I had made more money and maybe done some other things? Sure. But like, also, how many people in their early 20s are hopping on planes every weekend? Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's so really amazing. And even if it just all it was that perspective shift. And like you said, having empathy for others, I think, well, that's worth 4 years right there, because that takes a lot of us a long time to get to that place.
Yeah. And I didn't end with college debt out of it. Mm-hmm. So win-win, you know?
Right. Oh, that's so great. And you said you met your wife when you were on the mission or during the missions season?
No, I met my wife in high school. We got married.
Oh,
yeah. So we met in high school. Around the time everything started going bad.
Okay,
so
cool.
So I was telling her today, we were talking on the phone, and we lived together. I was talking on the phone because I was out doing errands. This is a very weird side story.
I was going to have a follow-up question, so now I don't.
I was driving to the vet because my dog was getting groomed, and I was on the phone with my wife, who I share a residence with, and we were talking a little bit, and, you know, she was saying, you know, like, when I started the show, like, she's had to deal with some heavy emotions and all the things that come with me trying to navigate leaving an environment like this. And there's times there's low lows, there's times there's high highs. And we were talking about how, like, feels like everything's in a really good place now. I feel like I've really processed through a lot of that, the nasty nitty gritty work that you have to do. There's still more to do, but like, I feel like it's not just a constant hum in the background of like just trauma, you know? And, but I was joking with her. I said, well, you kind of came into my life right when it started. So you've gotten to see it. Like, you haven't known me prior to this. And so, you know, I was kind of giving her a shout out to say, hey, you know, thanks for sticking with it, because that's tough stuff. But yeah, we met in high school. And so I graduated, we dated. So she was still in high school when I graduated. And so we dated like long distance while I was working in Northern California in Fresno, and she was in Southern California. And then she graduated, we ended up getting married. She was 19. I think I was 21. We were super young.
Same as us.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Got married, and literally, I mean, we had like, I think like, I was making $500 a week at the time working for a missions organization. Not a good contract to sign. And ended up having like, we had like $2,000 or $3,000 saved up. And basically that was our parachute until we could get to India, and our little bit of money would keep coming in. And we were there supposed to be for a year. We ended up being there for like 3 months, and ended up moving back, and that was a whole fiasco. But I met her in high school, and just kind of, she's been along for a very bumpy ride.
Wow. So this is, to be clear, the IFB high school.
Yeah.
Where you went to school. So yeah. I'm assuming she left when you left, since she was
She was there for like one, she was there for like a little bit longer, and then she ended up finishing at like a charter school. She's got an interesting perspective, because like her family was religious and it wasn't a closed enrollment. So it wasn't just church kids. There were people that just wanted like a better version of public school. So like her parents were Christian, like evangelical Southern Baptist-ish. And they put her in just so she wouldn't be around like the worldly influences that happen in public school. And so like, I think she realizes more now that was wrong than at the time. I think at the time she was kind of like, why are you like, I don't get what's going on, you know?
Right.
We're kids.
That makes sense.
We're kids.
Right.
Like,
trying to figure out. Dealing with that anyway.
You know? Right. So, but yeah, but I think at the time it was just kind of this weird, like, okay. Yeah, this is, I've had good experiences at the school. Like it's, right. It just feels like who's talking about what and what's going on. And I'm also right. In high school. So
yeah,
let's figure this out.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, that makes more sense, because I was thinking like, oh, well, how connected was she with the church? So just the school.
Yeah.
So it wasn't,
she's
like
got
a big...
lot of outsider
okay.
eyes. Like, and it
she's
was
got a lot
far
of worldliness to her.
Right. And it was far more strict before she got there. Like it started to loosen up a bit at the end. Like you don't have to wear ties on Wednesday. But like, you know, before that, like, I mean, I was just barely, my parents were starting to break on music and stuff. So I was starting to listen to like a little bit. But like when she first got there is when I got in trouble for listening to Weezer. And then like by my senior year, my parents were kind of like, whatever, we don't really care. Like, and I think that's mainly because my mom wanted to listen to Def Leppard and she was tired of not. So I think all of a sudden it's morally okay. But
right. I decided I want to do it.
Right.
I miss my music. So everyone can listen to it. No,
we
drums.
Could listen to like classical music and like quartets and like something like that. But like anything with a beat, like any drum, any, you know, all that stuff was in.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Oh, no. Yeah, in movies, I was lucky. We got to watch movies. My mom was a literature teacher, so, like, she understood a little bit more, like, story. You know, she was still, like, no Harry Potter, no any of this. And now she tries to get me into it, and I'm like, dude.
I miss that.
You made me turn on this. I will never watch this. No nostalgia here. But like we got to watch stuff and we would just have conversations about it. So it was like there's elements like that that were really healthy versus like my friends where it's like, he likes this movie that has a villain in it, so he must want to be a, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff.
Blowing it way out of proportion. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So now, are you just mentioned your mom. Are your parents out of the church now? Are they still involved?
My parents were there till about 3 or 2 years ago. My mom left like 4 years ago and just like stopped working there. And then kind of slowly stopped going to services. My dad was on staff till about 2 years ago. And now they live near us or not by it. I think they're in both in very different spots, I think, in their kind of journey, figuring out where they're at. But I mean, they see that there are definite issues, at least both. I don't want to speak for them too much, but
no,
like I would say now they see where there are some definite issues. I think the biggest part for them is just wrestling with, like, the more you admit is wrong, I think the more you admit you feel like you may have wasted 20 years of your life or 30 years of your life. And you also, like, I can imagine as a parent, like, there's got to be some levels of, like, well, if it was as bad as he's saying, you know, I'm sure there's guilt and stuff there. But, like, again, we've maintained a good relationship, I would say, for 98% of my existence, which is pretty good. The 2% really sucked, but that was a 2-year, 3-year period where it was really like just, and even then it was still pretty good. It was just like it would be big explosions along the way those last 2 years. It's just because we're in it. We were like in the thick of it.
So they do live now near you. Are you an only child?
No. The only one that really matters, you know, but I'm the youngest.
The youngest child.
There you go. And he's 5 years older. So like he was so far ahead where like, you know, by the time I was going through that stuff, he was already out of the house and I think out of college already. And, you know, so we don't talk much about any of this stuff just because, again, he got the more extreme 5 years before I was on the scene. He had a different youth pastor by the time I got a youth pastor, like, so our touch points are really different. And I think he took longer to figure out it was, you know, I mean, he was a major rule follower to where it's like, you know, hey, read the King James only. And he's like, okay, that's the only Bible I read. And like, I was a rule follower, but I was a questioner where it was like, I will, but why? And so like, those two personalities gave us very different experiences and caused us to butt heads at times, you know, over stuff like that. So, but yeah, just me and my brother and then my parents.
I relate to that a lot. I have a sister that's 18 months younger than me, and we sound a lot like we butted heads a lot. I'm the oldest, so I was the rule follower and like, you know, I got to be the practice child. And then the one right under me, that she was the questioner. So she was more rebellious. Our family was rebellious, so we were always in hot water. But then we have baby sister who was 9 years later. Wow. So it's
totally
so interesting talking now. Yeah, our experiences were so vastly different. And by the time baby sister came along, she's basically an only child at that point. Like my sister and I got married in our teens. So, you know, we're married. And so, yeah, completely, which I'm glad for her. There's a lot less trauma that baby sister has to deal with. And so I'm like, well, you just thank us. We took it all and you need a lot less therapy than we do. But it is so interesting, that perspective, just with the same family raised pretty much the same way, but just those different time frames make such a huge difference.
Yeah,
such a
definitely.
Huge difference. It's, you said you and your brother don't really talk about this much. My sister and I think it was just last week, we started a sessions with a sis. We were laughing our asses off. Like we haven't laughed that hard because she moved away to Florida in so long. And so we're going to start doing it more often because we find so much. Yes, it's traumatic. Yes, it was awful going through it. We've always been able to find the humor in it. And like now we laugh a lot about it. And I find it so healing to talk about our experiences. Pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But at least the same names that you can talk about in the same spot. Yeah.
You're still married to the same wife that you married from high school? Okay. I am too. And I got married at 19 as well. And people are always like, oh my gosh, you guys are amazing. Like, I can't believe you're still married after all that shit. And I just like to remind people like, well, It has not been easy. But do you feel like it's impacted your marriage?
Yeah, I mean, we were definitely, I mean, so by the time that we finally really left anything connected, I was probably 25, I think.
Okay.
To like, and that's, I mean, it would be recent-ish sounding, but I would say like, that's like the final tie is cut. Like,
okay.
So, you know, I was already very much like, I was religious, but not like, basically like by the end, I worked with an orphanage and like we had supporting churches that were very fundamentalist still, but like the checks cashed. And so I'm like, if it'll feed an orphan, like, great. But like, as far as like internally, like, I didn't care about drinking. I didn't care about Bible translations. I didn't care. I didn't believe, you know, probably 60% of the things that were like fundamentals in their mind. I don't know if you watch Welcome to Plathville at all. This might be an interesting spot. So there's a conversation between two people that grew up very fundamentalist, and the one guy, Ethan, is sitting there with his wife, Olivia. They're talking about getting divorced. And the conversation is basically, you know, he's saying, it's not fair to me that you've changed so much. She's saying, I've always questioned. I haven't really changed as much as you think. He wants her to go back to this very, you know, simple patriarchal way of living. She says, it's unfair of you to ask that of me. And anyway, this long conversation, and he says, you know, I feel like you're searching for something you haven't found. And like everything that they said, you know, my wife sent me the clip and she's like, this is literally conversations that we've had a million times throughout a relationship. And, you know, and I think it's telling, like the conversation that they had on TV was them about to get a divorce. And it's like our conversations through the years have always been, you know, hey, I'm having these radically different feelings. I'm changing what I think about this. I think the reason that we've lasted, you know, knock on wood, the reason that we've, you know, but I think the reason we're in, I think probably the best place we've been since we got married right now, I think the reason that we've gone through all that is because one, we went through a lot of bad stuff really early, like very early, just circumstantial. And I think that kind of brought us together. It does one of two things, brings you together, tears you apart. And so I think one of the things that kept us together through the initial stuff was like, we've already gone through this much, like we're in this together, and we kind of bonded through that. Probably not a healthy thing, but it's something that was good. Like, I think it did test us. But I think also because I always was questioning and like I always was kind of trying to figure out, like she said, she's like, I don't think even now that you're not religious, she's like, you haven't really changed in the way that if you're not convinced of something, you don't do it. And if you believe something's right, you do it. And, you know, for her, she's just always tried to give me space to do that and, you know, leave it, you know, not, it's not her problem to change me. You know, but there's been times like I've tried to go, I haven't been empathetic to go, hey, I feel this way, but you probably don't. Let me walk you through this. It'll just be like, I don't think that's right anymore, you know? And so, but it's just been a lot of those conversations. And I think we've just had, it's not that we always have the same solutions. I think it's that we have the same approach to talking through the problems. And so I think it's been really good. Like when it comes to religion, when it comes to ministry, when it comes to making any of the decisions, it's like, we may not end up on the exact same page, you know, like she's still a little bit religious. I'm not, you know, we're in this space, but it's like, we have respect and empathy and we can have the dialogue. And I think that's kind of the big key, you know, because I think what most people's relationships are based on, and it's like the Olivia and Ethan clip, you know, you can find it online. Like it's very much this conversation that's probably relatable, but it's two people and one is saying, I want you to find the truth, like my version of it and stay there. And it's another person saying, I don't know if I'll ever find it. Life is about constantly getting new information and changing. And I think if you're open to always changing, if faced with better information, you're going to have a healthy relationship. If you're basing your relationship on the person staying the same as who they were 10 years ago, no relationship's going to last because, you know, if you stayed the same for 10 years, that means you haven't improved. it doesn't necessarily mean you've gotten worse. It just means you haven't changed at all, which means you've stayed the same, you know, the same idiot you were at 18, which is probably not good.
We don't want that. No, no. And we are so like, I know, like for me, and we got out, when we got out, I was 31, but it's so ingrained too. We weren't real knowledgeable on anything because our, you know, our minds were not very open to the world.
Right. Sure.
It was very closed. So it was very interesting, and we're still working on it, you know, 12 years later. Getting into that, you sound very healthy. I'm very happy for you because you guys are so young and you already are learning these healthy things, because it took so much work. We had no preparation whatsoever for being married, and you lived with your parents until the night you got married. Yep. So it was, which
we were never alone in a room together till after the ceremony. Yeah.
I know. So cool. So healthy.
Yeah.
So there was so much learning to do. And again, we're still doing it. As far as communication, period, and just how to talk to another human, mm-hmm. And just all these things you're deconstructing in your mind, as far as like, what do I believe? What don't I believe? You know, am I going to be religious still? Mm-hmm. And like, what do I think of God? And it took years and years and years for us to get where we're at now. And we are truly, as far as like marriage, the happiest we've ever been.
No.
But when people are like, oh, it's so amazing, I'm like, no. We have put in, you know, 12
piece of cake.
Years. Yeah, it was so easy. And no, it wasn't. Like, and I think that's the hard thing with recovering from anything. But I see this a lot, like in our world of cult stuff. And it's a lot of work to recover. And so I think a lot of people give up. It's too hard. And so many people from my cult that have gotten out as well, I feel like, and including myself till recently, did not take a chance to breathe and heal and figure out. It was just jump straight into the next thing.
Yep.
And or go off the deep end, like one of two extremes, I felt like a majority of us. And it's so damaging because it was like 10 years before I really started doing real work. So for 10 years, you're just suffering through a marriage. And I'm not saying we've always been friends, like we've always had a great time with each other.
Same here.
Yeah. So it's like there was always a good connection. But not what it is now. Like now I'm like, oh my gosh, we didn't even know each other.
Sure.
And so it is, it's very interesting, I think. And I love what you said about the growing. Like if we're not growing, like how sad, you know? And I feel like that's my job now, is to grow. And I always want to be learning, and now raising children. Like I want to be teaching my children. Like I apologize to them probably every day.
Yeah.
And I want them to see that. I want them to see, hey, mommy makes mistakes too. I don't have it all figured out. I'm sorry. And just raising them a lot differently than I was, you know, it was so shame-based and, so just trying to be different, but showing that growth, like, you know, and appreciating that in my husband and kids and myself. And then also just showing that there's always room, like we always have room for growth. So,
And I think that whole journey out too, like there's bouts. I mean, I had bouts of depression and bouts of things. And I think there's a lot of times, because it is heavy stuff, like I don't blame, because I wasn't a healthy spouse at a lot of points, you know? And so I think she would have been, like when we talk about relationships ending, I think sometimes it's rightfully so. Like,
oh, yes.
I think she would have been completely justified for stretches to say, I'm done. And I couldn't have been like, well, that's crazy. Why would you do that? You know? And so I just appreciate, like, you know, I told her today, I was like, thank you for sticking by, you know? And she just kind of laughed because it's like, it's such a crazy, you just instantly flash through all of the last several years. But it's like, you know, I do appreciate that she stuck by when she could have rightfully been like, this is too much because you just need a therapist and probably not me here, you know.
Not a wife.
Right.
A lot of people from my past are divorced now. And again, I don't judge it at all. Like, rightfully so. We didn't know each other when we got married. None of us did. Like you said, you're not allowed to be in a room alone with someone. You don't know them. There's no possible way you really know what this person is like. So it's sad, but also it's like, well, it's probably better because a majority of us probably never should have been married in the first place.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk. I know at the beginning we kind of talked about, you have the podcast, Preacher Boys. Did you kind of talked about what prompted you to do that? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was, long story short, it was basically I was driving home from work, and I don't recommend this. I was driving home from work, and I was scrolling through Twitter, and I saw that there was a case very similar to the one I had discovered when I was a teenager. It was in Maryland, and a pastor had been arrested. Same exact story repeated years later now. And pastors were literally raising money for the guy's legal fees. And so I just saw it. I got upset and I recorded like an impromptu live and said, hey, if you go to this church, like basically everybody that was involved in it, and just said, if you go here, if your church supports them, if your church is friends with this person, if your pastor hangs out with this guy, if you have this guest speaker, like you should leave. And it was the first time really I like publicly talked about it. Like I had conversations thousands of times with people one-on-one or in like small groups, but like to go on Facebook and like tagging people, so, like two of the people on the list were people I'd worked with before. And so, you know, it was just like, that was it. And then my background was media. So I was like, I'm going to do a documentary about this. And so I went in my house, I cut together a little sizzle reel, I put it out, and like, I thought if I can get three people to talk to me, I can make a documentary. And then like 20 people reached out that night. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll do a podcast. And so I did the podcast. I basically planned on self-funding a documentary. I was making good money at the time between my main job. And then like, I was making a lot from my side work at that time, way more than I'm making right now. And it kind of bums me out. But going into 2020, I was like, I'll just fly myself out. I have cameras and stuff. I have access to that. I can shoot. And COVID shut everything down. And then literally we moved to Vegas. And like the first week we were here, I was making more than $10,000 a month. I'll say that. And then by the end of the first week, I was making about $3,000 a month because all of my clients started dropping due to COVID. And so I went and, you know, and our rent was close to that range. So it literally went from like, yeah, it went from like, I'm going to do this. I'm gung ho. I can do it myself. I'll pay for all whatever I need to pay for. I got it. To then, oh, my business fell apart. Our relationship was not doing good because I was depressed about that. And I was depressed still about, you know, the trauma was a constant buzz of that. So like, it was just a mess. And it just kept getting held off. But the podcast became like an unexpected, unplanned thing where it went from, you know, I think by the end of the first year, it was like 250,000 downloads or something. By the, you know, we're just about to hit 3 million downloads after 3 years. So like, it's literally just been, and then Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, like it just kept blowing up with these stories and getting more and more traction. And basically, by the end of 2020, I was contacted by a documentary crew. Said, we're working on a documentary series. And I ended up talking with them. I talked on and off with them for about a year and a half, just answering questions. I helped record some interviews where they asked me questions to cut together like a mock pilot to sell to studios. And so in a roundabout way, my initial vision came true. It just came through the lens of someone else, which I'm very thankful for, because I don't think I could have, you know, because people ask, are you still thinking about doing one? I'm like, I think, I don't know how I match what I'm doing with the podcast with this series that I'm making. At some point I probably will, because I'll get the itch to really do it. But right now, the fact that, you know, again, the YouTube's at like 2.5 million views, the podcast at like 3 million views. And then now there's a series that came from an Emmy-winning, Oscar shortlisted director creating a 4-part series that hit 7. It's like, what do you guys want? Like, this is pretty cool. And it was cool. Yeah, it was cool. After the first time we filmed together, I was at dinner with the director, and she basically said, I know you wanted to do a documentary in the beginning and you weren't thinking about a podcast. She's like, but it's pretty cool. Like, it's all happening. And I was like, that's how I view this, you know? And it was just a cool moment of like, my goal was always awareness. And it's like, we're sitting here with way more awareness than I ever could have imagined. And, you know, in a series that again, is on a major network or a major cable, you know, outlet, and you know, seeing like Sports Illustrated writing up about it, and like it's just a very cool thing. And I told the director after the last episode aired, I just said, hey, thank you. This is very validating. Like, I could never have imagined that as a 16-year-old that's going, nobody's listening, to then go like, oh, everybody's listening. This is very cool. You know, that's a very, it took 12 years, but it's a cool arc for sure.
Well, and really in the scheme of things, when you just said a 16-year-old kid, I'm like, that's really not that much time. Like 12 years kind of seems like a long time, but when you get old like me, you're like, well, it's not really that much time. And when you see how much has, and yes, right, it's probably majority happened last several years, but that's a lot. Like, yeah, that's a lot to be proud of. And you've accomplished a lot. And I love, like you said, it's all about awareness. So however it gets, you know, to people, yeah, it's neat that you view it that way and that you're not all like, oh, someone else did a documentary that I was going to do. Yeah.
I was so
thrilled. Plus, there's always room for more.
Yeah. When I started reading her resume, I was like, oh, this is way cooler than what, you know. And look, I'm not bad. I've done some cool things, but it's, I mean, she was like shortlisted for the Oscars last year for her documentary. So like, that's a different level and different ball game. And like, I don't put myself as like, we're just two fellow filmmakers just finding our way in the world. Like, no, she knows what she's doing. And the people who were featured in the series in Let Us Pray, like, you know, I had imposters. It was like the opposite, where it's like I had imposter syndrome being like, these people are amazing and they have gone and done some incredible stuff. Like, and then here's me, like, literally, like, I took down this church. I won this lawsuit. I put this guy behind bars. I did this pretext phone call with the police in this operation. And then I'm like, I do a podcast, and here's, you know, like, there's that level of like, as validating it is as it is, you're also like, me? like you're calling me? Is there nobody else here that we can talk to? But
added so much to it, honestly. Like, you did fabulous, and it really did add. It's helpful having you have the background, you know, and it's you're still doing,
and I know
something.
All that to be true, but it's when your subconscious kicks in and you're like, yes, I should not be here. But no, I feel very proud of it. I feel very happy with the involvement. Like, I feel, you know, I could there be more added? Yes. Should there be more added in a season two? Maybe, you know, I think there should be. But you know, there's stuff where I feel, and I told the director this as well, but I just said, I feel like the quote that I always loved when I was doing editing, like, well, I still do editing, but when I edit, one of the quotes I always think about is, perfection is not when there's nothing left to add, it's when there's nothing left to take away. And I feel that way about this series, in that, you know, there's a billion stories you could add. I mean, I've done like 300 plus hours of content on this subject. There's lots you can add. But there's nothing I would change about the series as it sits. And I think it sits as a, I know I'm biased because I'm in it, but I think it sits as a perfect kind of introduction to this world. And I think it does justice to all of the women who lent their voices to it and gives everybody a chance to shine, which I think is really, really cool.
I thought so too. The director did a fabulous job, because I haven't watched all of them, but I pretty much watch every documentary.
I'm getting off this call. You haven't watched all of them. Oh, all the documentaries. I think
all
of Let Us Pray. I was like, I am out of here.
No, that I've watched. All the documentaries, like all
it's
the
four episodes, okay? I don't know. I was like, what are we doing?
I started it and finished it. Like, that wasn't a four episode. It was a one episode. I just stayed.
Yeah.
But it was very well put together. Okay, so where can everyone find you? I mean, if they don't already know, that's kind of sad, because how can you not? On your podcast, do you have guests that are not IFB?
It is play by ear. I mean, 95% of my guests are IFB. When it branches, like, anybody who I'm interviewing who's like a survivor is IFB. Like, I'm not interviewing, you know, I questioned for a while, like, do I start interviewing altar boys from the Catholic Church? Do I start interviewing, you know, which I actually for a while was like, it would make sense. I could have like preacher boys and altar boys, and I could start going down this chain of things, but there's not any other boys. So it's like, there's just two random channels.
Then you're done.
And, but yeah, the survivors I interview are all from the Independent Baptist movement. Okay. I think I've done maybe two or three that aren't. If they aren't, it's because they are somebody that has like a point of authority or input that I think is helpful. So like I interviewed, you know, I just interviewed Jordan Belfort from The Wolf of Wall Street. I interviewed his ex-wife, who Margot Robbie's character is based on. And so we talked about her new book, because now she's a psychologist or a therapist. So like she wrote a book about women in abusive relationships. So like that was my entry point, and I thought it was helpful. And, you know, so there's stuff like that. Sarah Edmondson from Nexium, like talking about the similarities between like cults and like the very loosely named religion that is kind of culty. So like it's play it by ear, but like I feel like anybody who has experienced religious abuse or trauma can probably relate to, like, if we talk about five things, they'll probably relate to three or four of those things. Like the terms are different. Like you said, marking versus like separation, like it's all the same deal, you know, like it's like there's a playbook at this point for this stuff. So that's a long answer to a short question, but yeah.
And that's exactly what I wanted, because that's where I was going with it, is to let all the listeners know, just because it's focused more on IFB, it's useful for any of us.
Yeah.
And because I've listened to a lot, and I think, you know, so everyone, it doesn't matter if you know nothing about IFB, if you come from any kind of background like this, you will definitely, definitely relate. So it is so interesting still, that whole concept, even like how even cults like Nexium, you know, it's like, it's amazing how many points just are like, wait, were they reading the same book? Because
I asked Sarah and Nippy that, I said, did you guys grow up religious? Because this just feels like Christian summer camp. And it feels like you just went full bore into it. Like, what is that, what primed you? And they're like, no, none. And I was like, then how did that not seem super weird? Like,
I know,
I could see how I could get into it easily.
Right.
But I was like, but that's the interesting thing, is like everybody's experience a little bit different. But there is, you know, for someone who's listening who hasn't listened, like any of my interviews with authors or experts, like they're typically not from that world. So like a trauma therapist is going to be helpful to anybody with trauma.
Of course.
Religious trauma therapist, a cult expert, like all that stuff is going
to
be helpful.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So please listen to his podcast, because it's amazing. And then I will put everything in the show notes, of course, on where you can find Eric. What are all your social handles if you want people to find you?
Yeah, so anywhere on social at Preacher Boys Doc, Preacher Boys DOC, except for TikTok, which I believe is Preacher Boys Pod, because the other was taken for some reason. And then YouTube, Preacher. If you type in Preacher Boys, if you type in Eric and anything similar to Skorzinski, it'll pop up. Like, there's not many Eric Skorzinskis running around. Type in Eric SKW. You know, type in Preacher Boys. If you want to just watch about this, like, search Let Us Pray on HBO. Or if you go anywhere that has Investigation Discovery, it's available. So, like, Amazon Prime Premium, I think, has it. Just Google. Yeah. Like, I had the day it was coming out, people were like, how do I find it? I can't find it. And I'm like, I swear to God, if you just take the question you asked me and you type it in Google, you'll get the answer. So,
it works every time. Every time.
How do I watch
it? I bet
this?
Your name is fun to search now.
Yeah. My it's so weird because my wife is so offline, like, with all this stuff. And like, so I'll Google her name and there's like one picture, but it's like from something with me. And like, I Google my name and it's like 20 pages of, like, I have such a digital footprint now of my own making. And it's like, before the series came out, I was like, I need to double check to make sure there's nothing too embarrassing on the first like three pages of Google. So, but.
Oh, that's awesome. But yes, you got to watch the documentary, everyone.
Yeah.
Let Us Pray.
That's like,
oh,
the number one place.
Gosh.
Like, go watch that. If that's something that's interesting to you, then the podcast is a great add on to that experience. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you so much hanging out with me today. I was so excited that you agreed to come do this, and I know my listeners will enjoy your story. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shanty Pants Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires, at shantypantsshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there, all the things, all the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast. You can leave reviews. You can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.